This hour of the Mike Salk Show is powered by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Yeah, rolling on with the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. If you're just joining us, it's already been kind of a busy morning. Pete Carroll came in a little early, 6:30, right off the plane. And so, we jumped on with Pete so that he could do it live and hopefully go to sleep. But we'll replay that at 9:30 as we always do, and play at least a couple of cuts throughout the morning, give you a little sense as to what Pete said. I mean, look, he's Pete Carroll. He's going to remain optimistic. He's going to remain hopeful. He's going to take away many of the good things from the game, and there were there. I mean, like, there were good things in that game yesterday. Defensively, special teams-wise, I mean, like, those things did happen, whether they were overshadowed by the offense or not. They did happen. They did do things, especially defensively, that were awfully important and successful in that game and kept them in it right until the final closing seconds. So, yeah, there were some good things. And, yes, Pete the optimist is going to point at those. If that makes you mad, he doesn't care.
Positive Pete, baby.
But at the other side of it is what's going on with specifically his quarterback in this offense. It is not good. It is not indicative of what we've watched for a decade. And if you're looking for, to figure out what it is that's going wrong, I mean, listen to Pete's answer. I specifically asked Pete, what can Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, do to make this offense work better?
We, like I said, we were open, you know. We got open on plays, and so we were there available. And that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get, and we needed to just find our way to convert. I don't know that we drop any balls tonight. I don't remember them, not catching a football, we didn't get any balls knocked down, over at the line of scrimmage. So there's a we just need to come through and convert, and everybody needs to contribute to that.
I mean, he doesn't use the words Russell or Wilson in that answer, but he used the words Russell and Wilson, right?
We're open.
I mean, we were open. Now, he's mentioning the fact that Russell just has had some issues with his accuracy. You know, is it finger-related? I would sure assume so at this point, right? I mean, last week I watched the game from in the building, and I didn't see the same accuracy or inaccuracy. Watching this now, third game back, it's like, yeah, look, he's obviously just, his finger's just not right.
I can take him at his word. He says it's fine.
Yeah, I don't believe
Practice
that.
Practice says it's fine.
No, 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 and no. Russell Wilson's one of the most accurate passers.
Do we need
passers.
To hear from Dr. Shin again?
Please. That's exactly who I want to hear from. That's an opinion I absolutely trust. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I believe he believes it's fine, but it's not fine. Russell Wilson's one of the most accurate passers in the history of the NFL. He doesn't sail four passes over the heads of open receivers in a single game in good weather. It doesn't happen. False. That does not happen. I'm not going to believe Russell Wilson's okay. And just because it feeds into his weird little fantasy of being superhuman, sorry. Doesn't do it for me. The finger's not okay. You don't miss that many throws. Now, obviously, it comes and goes. Obviously, he's still able to make some.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he's making adjustments or what, but don't tell me one of the greatest accuracy passers in the history of the game hurts his finger, comes back, and mysteriously is inaccurate, but it doesn't have to do with his finger. That's nonsensical.
Have you ever, you've played baseball before, right?
Sure.
You ever had one game where you get the yips? You get in your head.
Yeah.
And you just start overthrowing everybody.
Play catch, right? Like trying to find that release point.
And once it's in your head once, you try to not overthrow somebody, you do it two more times, and now it's like, oh no, is this just my day now?
Yeah, but that's me. I'm not Russell Wilson.
I know, but then he threw that ball to Everett, the touchdown. You're like, whoa, never mind.
No, I don't say, oh, never mind. I say, oh, good, I'm glad he was able to muscle that one in there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If all of those things were happening, but it didn't coincide with him having a finger injury that by all accounts he came back at the short end of the amount of time it could take, yeah, I'd believe you. You can get the yips. You can have issues with your release point for sure. I don't believe that just coincidentally happened after he hurt his finger. That doesn't make sense or work for me. So, look, Pete, pretty clear. Why isn't the offense working? Well, the guys are open. He obviously got issues with the running game as well, but in that case, he says, well, you just need more attempts. Yeah, I think one of the reasons you don't have as many attempts is because the running game is trash. Yeah, he can say Chris Carson isn't there and you miss a guy like that. Sure. You know what? It's not just that. Alex Collins was not good yesterday. DJ Dallas was worse. I mean, those guys weren't good. They don't break tackles. They're not fast. They're not explosive. They don't build something out of nothing. But your offensive line doesn't do anything at all.
5 3 and outs.
And you watch these running plays, just like, oh, look, there's a guy directly in his face as soon as he gets the ball. And Russell doesn't have any time to do anything. I mean, the offensive line is atrocious. I'm going to keep coming back to what I said at 6:30, and I mean, we'll talk about this throughout this week. Four things going on at once. One, you don't have as much talent as most of the other teams. You have drafted poorly for a decade, and it is starting to hurt you. It's hurting you.
Yeah.
Two, your scheme is not all it's cracked up to be. Pete can say the guys are open. Maybe they are, but there's not a ton of creativity. The call that they made on the goal line there, on the two-point conversion, had no imagination, no creativity. You're not taking the best use of the players that you do have. And that, to me, is scheme and coaching and what they're doing in that side of it. And then the quarterback is obviously not right, whether it's his injury. I'm sure that's part of it. Confidence issue, a crisis of confidence. Sure, Justin, maybe that's part of it. He doesn't look happy. He doesn't look like Russell Wilson. Maybe he's unhappy with the situation here. Certainly, he hinted at that in the offseason with the four teams that he'd be willing to take a trade to. And then throw in the fact that, and I think this is really sad. I do feel for Russell. He's missing Trevor Moad, his personal, not personal, but his good friend, one of his best friends, close confidant, and mental skills coach. Unfortunately, passed away at the beginning of this season. I don't think I would ignore that as a factor for Russ. I'm sure it's incredibly difficult to go through everything he's gone through this year without the person that he would rely on most in those situations. This is a guy who lost his dad when he was younger, right? Who was obviously a male mentor in his life. Trevor Moad, is my understanding, was very much the same. He and Pete don't seem, regardless of what Pete said, they don't seem to have the kind of relationship where they have that sort of mentoring and bonding right now based on kind of the different spots they're in. So does it make sense to me that Russell's kind of a lost and adrift? Yeah. I feel bad for him in those ways. I don't feel bad for him because for whatever reason he decided he needed to come back too early, like from his injury. Or I think Russ has made some mistakes, but I can also share some level of sympathy here with what's gone on with his good friend and confidant and Trevor Moad. So look, there's a lot. Those three things are all happening at once. They're all real. I'm not going to keep up with this, you know, blame one, blame the other. Oh, it's not enough talent. No, 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 they have enough talent. It's an issue with the scheme. No, 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 the scheme's fine. It's just the quarterback makes mistakes. All three are problems. They don't have enough talent. Their scheme's not very good, and their quarterback's playing like not himself. All three of those things are true. And at the same time, they're playing hard. Really hard. They don't give up. Their defense was out there doing everything you could possibly ask of them. Are they undermanned at times? Yes. Do they have great talent? Well, not up front. Blech. My God.
True.
Their defensive line is awful.
Is the gap in skill worse this year than years past?
I don't know. I think there's a question to be asked about Russell and how he, for most of his career, has elevated those around him. And right now that's not happening. And I want to talk to Brock about that coming up here in about a half hour, because that's a Brock thing. Like, can you elevate the guys around you and make them better? Russell's not doing that. So I think we're seeing the talent gap more than ever. But we've been talking about a talent gap for years now. We've been talking about how bad these drafts are for years now. We've been talking about some of the mistakes they've made in free agency for years now. That's not new. They do have a talent gap. They do have a scheme problem, and they got a quarterback problem right now. All three of those things are true, and yet Pete is one heck of a leader. He really is. You can say whatever you want about Pete's scheme. You can say whatever you want about whether or not he's got the right philosophy. He's got those guys playing hard, man. He's got that defense battling every single play right down to the end that they almost pulled that off. So you're not going to criticize this coach for the thing that I think is most important for a coach, which is to set the tone in the building. And he is still continuing to set the right tone for the Seahawks day in, day out. So it is a complicated state of affairs. All of those things are true at the same time. So what do you do next? It's going to be a conversation here over the next 5 or 6 weeks. But what I'll say today is this. Pete still knows how to lead. Can we agree on that based on how this team is fighting for him? Pete has not lost his ability to lead. Two, Russell still knows how to throw. He still knows how to play quarterback.
Yeah.
Regardless of what we've seen here for the last few weeks or maybe the last few months, Russell didn't get bad overnight. So Russ knows how to throw and he knows how to play quarterback. Both of those things are true. And if all that is the case, someone above them both is going to have to sort this out and figure out how it all works together. Because Russell is still a good player and Pete Carroll is still a good leader. Yeah, they have issues with their scheme. Yeah, they have issues maybe with their philosophy. I don't know. At least it's a conversation. Yeah, or at least how they meet that philosophy. Yes, they have issues in talent. Yes, Russell's not playing very well. Like, all those things need to kind of get figured out. And I don't know who sits down with them and does all that. I don't know the way this franchise works right now above Pete Carroll. Because he's not the owner. So there are layers between Pete and ultimately ownership. So how does all that work? I don't know. I don't know that any of us do. But Jody Allen's the one who's in charge of this team. She owns it. And someone's going to need to step in and try to sort through that because you've still got a talented quarterback and you've still got a coach who has not lost the locker room and knows how to lead and has had unbelievable success in his career. So how do you make those things come together so that your team's not 3-8? 3-8! The Seahawks, by the way, in a league where everybody's 500 this year. Nobody's good.
We're just under.
Everybody's in it except you and Detroit. What? I'm supposed to be talking about the Mariners right now, but my God, when you start putting all this together, it doesn't sound right. Like, and who steps in to help with that? Because there is still plenty of positive here. Pete Carroll is still a good coach. Russell Wilson is still a good quarterback. Those two things are true. And it's true that they're playing like complete garbage. So how do you put all that? Yesterday was painful, Justin.
Everything about that game hurt. Everything hurt. Like it was the. Have you ever had your dad like working on a car or something in the house, like trying to rewire something in the dark, and you're like in a cramped corner holding a flashlight trying to help him, and he's yelling at you like it's your fault? That's what that game felt like to me.
I can't relate to one thing you just said, but I'm sure
anybody who's ever tried to help their dad do something on a car.
I love the idea of my dad being under a car. To me, that is like where the hysterics start. Like the idea of my dad putting his head under a car and knowing what he was looking at sounds like a riot. What's even under there? The muffler?
The muffler.
What do you do under the car? Like I kind of understand what you do in the hood. I mean, I don't actually.
Okay, how about this? Have you ever tried to crawl behind a TV as a kid in a cramped space and hold the flashlight and try to get the right wires hooked up to your old flat screen that used to sit on the floor with the surround sound?
When I was a kid, we used to have to put the bunny ears in the right place.
Okay, there you go. Maybe that's the equivalent.
Get the UHF going.
And he's in the living room pointing, like, wait, no, just not that. And it's, no matter what, it's your fault.
Now I relate. Now I can relate. That makes a little bit more sense.
Oh, that's awful.
But last night was painful. I don't know if it felt quite like that. I don't even know what that's like.
I said a 10 millimeter. I need the 10 millimeter.
10 millimeter what?
Socket.
Socket?
A 10 millimeter socket.
Is it a socket what you put like a light a plug into?
Man, we're not doing this.
You need different kinds of sockets? Isn't there just sort of standard there?
It's 7:15.
It is?
It's time for
Not yet. No, you're early. I want to explore the whole socket thing more. All right, it's 7:15. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
It wasn't pretty, whatever we watched last night. Somehow, though, the Seahawks did manage a couple touchdowns in the game, but, man, it was not an NFL offense, let alone one that features an elite franchise quarterback and some of the best weaponry in the league. That, what we saw, that was putrid. That was really, really hard to see. Seahawks lose 17-15 in Washington. They fall to just 3-8 on the year. They've lost three straight games now, 6 of 7, not turning in the right direction. The result, one thing, but the way things looked, quite another. We've seen the Seahawks get dominated by a defensive line that suffocates them with pressure, right? You know what it looks like when Aaron Donald and the Rams just dominate them. We've seen what it looks like when they beat themselves with self-inflicted wounds and penalties and substitution issues. But this wasn't any of that. It was everything at once. They just look lost. they just looked like they had no answers, and it was different because so much of it fell on both the coaching staff that couldn't design an offense capable of getting the ball to its playmakers and a quarterback that couldn't choose the open receiver and then often missed high and wide when he did. That's foundation shaking to see Russell Wilson laid low like this. And while obviously I think the finger injury and the new offensive scheme are all part of the problem, it just doesn't quite explain everything. Pete Carroll asked about the passing game last night.
Film doesn't lie, you know. We're missing some stuff. I don't see indications of that in practice as we're going. And so I gotta look at the film, you know. We can talk about all the different throws that didn't get where they're supposed to go. But I don't know what to make of it other than the fact we got to keep battling and keep trying to figure it out. I felt like we had some guys open tonight, you know, with some chances. And unfortunately, we didn't hook it up.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows for sure what we're watching and what the problem is and why it's turned so far south. But it doesn't look like the show that we've all watched for a decade now, and it's almost impossible to imagine that all of the major characters would be returning for another sequel.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Welcome to Seattle, Robbie Ray. Mariners doing a whole lot more than just dipping their toe in free agent waters yesterday. They signed the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner and their top pitching target to a five-year deal worth about $115 million. Ray gets an opt-out after 3 years and no trade clause for the first two. He just turned 30, so this deal would cover his ages 30 through 34 seasons, likely to be good years for a pitcher of his caliber, and that caliber's really high. Ray's always been solid, but the last year really saw him make some mechanical changes that obviously worked for him. Led the league with a 2.84 ERA, led it with 248 strikeouts, led with a whip just over one, which is amazing. Staggering numbers, really. Should make him the team's top starter, whether he gets the ball on opening day or not. Dan Plesac on MLB Network, he likes what this does for their chances.
This is a great move for the Mariners, who now, I really think, are a contender in the American League West. I really think they're a team that's going to make an impact.
As they should. A little surprised to see their first major deal go to a pitcher, because my read on DePoto was always that he'd prefer to stay away from long-term deals to older pitchers. But look, 5 years is manageable. Guy's a lefty. They tend to age better. And they got money to spend. So why not? There's not much not to like here. Ray's proven. He misses bats. He's shown to be a legitimate frontline starter. And not only does he give them what they need right now, he provides a solid bridge while we find out which of these minor league guys are legit and ready. So your rotation is probably Ray, Marco, Logan Gilbert, Chris Flexen, and then the battle is on for that final spot. It could include George Kirby, Matt Brash, Justin Dunn, and there may be others still to sign as well, because I don't think they're done. In fact, I would doubt that they are. Payroll for next season is still well under $100 million. They've been linked to some big-name bats like Chris Bryant, a guy that they targeted at the deadline last year. The A's haven't started dealing, so Matt Chapman and others could be a possibility. Next thing is, I think the Mariners need a bat.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
After a brief pause, we'll also welcome to Seattle Kalen DeBoer, officially the newest head coach of the University of Washington, signs a deal yesterday. Offensive-minded guy, had great success, the head coach at Fresno State, specifically turned around the career of UW castoff Jake Haener. Before that, he was the OC at Indiana, briefly had success there as well. So he'll be charged with restoring respect on Montlake, not to mention installing a modern offense that'll entice Sam Heward and others to stay and then build a recruiting base that obviously has fallen on very hard times. We won't know for a while whether or not he was the right choice, but while Oregon plays for the Pac-12 title next week and USC hires a proven commodity in Lincoln Riley, there's a lot of doubt, certainly here, because DeBoer is not as splashy or as proven as what USC just did. Kraken, another road win, this time 7-4 over Buffalo last night. A couple of goals for Jared McCann, two more for Mason Appleton, and then Tanev, Susie, Schwartz all pitch in as well. Two straight starts, two straight wins for Chris Drieger, and they will be in Detroit tomorrow. That's everything you need to know. We do that at quarter past every hour.
So yesterday I asked you, what's the maximum you want to spend in years, and you're like, I don't care, not my money. And then today you said, I like the money and I like the years they gave.
Well, yeah, I mean,
to Robbie Ray,
they did it well, okay. Right? I mean, I want them to do better than not good.
Absolutely.
But like, if they have to overspend, so what?
I'm just trying to say, so there is a category. So how much do you want to overspend for Chris Bryant?
Yeah, look, I don't worry about that. At the end of it, we can look at it and say, did they overspend or not? But I, like, who cares?
But with the market driving up the way that what Seager is going to have, and you know Correa is going to be more.
Dude, you need a bat.
Where do you expect Chris Bryant to be?
He's not as good as Correa. I mean, he's just not in that category.
Yeah, I know.
He really had one great season, his second year in the league. And since then, Chris Bryant has been pretty good, if not very good, but not great. I think is what you'd say. Since the year the Cubs won the World Series, what was that, 16 or 16. Whatever year that was? He was great that year. He had like a 7.5 war. He's one of the best players in the league. He hasn't done that since. He's never repeated that season. I think he was age 26 that year. And he's never, you know, it looked like he was a breakout, was going to be an MVP candidate every year. And unfortunately, his career, you know, been some injuries, et cetera. He just hasn't done that. Do I like Chris Bryant? Yes. Do I think that, you know, you break the bank? I would have spent more on Semien.
Okay.
And I think they were willing to do so. But at some point, look, whether it's Story or Bryant or whatever direction, or maybe you turn your attention to Matt Chapman if you can't get one of those guys, you need another bat.
Yes.
Right? I mean, like, this is almost non-negotiable. And they know that. By the way, this is not a criticism. They know that. Yesterday, they were able to make their first deal as they signed Robbie Ray. There's nothing not to like about that deal. I can't imagine there is a Mariner fan out there who wasn't happy when they signed Robbie Ray yesterday. Reigning Cy Young Award winner, age 30, reasonable contract, didn't have to give up anything for him other than a third-round pick. I mean, like, there's nobody who should have an issue with what the Mariners did yesterday. That's a great signing. And by all accounts, he wanted to come here too, right? He did his homework. They offered him money, but it's not stupid money. I don't think they overpaid for Robbie Ray. So what does that tell you? He did his homework, decided he wanted to play here. I don't know if he found out about the culture, talked to other players in the league, whether he knows some of the guys, but he chose to come here. He chose to go play with this team. I don't blame him. They are building something cool. So I there shouldn't be a Mariner fan alive who's not happy with what you got yesterday in Robbie Ray. And so good. Now you got one down. The next thing you do here is you probably sign a bat. You still got to replace Kyle Seager's production. I like what you did with Adam Frazier. That's a good player, useful player, helps you win.
He's what Dylan Moore wants to be, right?
Yes, sort of. Moore, I think, wants to. Yeah, no, almost.
What we wanted Dylan Moore to be.
No, Dylan Moore has more power than Frazier does. Frazier doesn't have any pop. Yeah, I mean, he might hit you 10 home runs a year, but I think the hope with Dylan Moore is that he could hit you 20. And then Dylan Moore is faster, just significantly faster.
Okay.
I mean, this guy doesn't run. Dylan Moore might be the fastest guy on the team.
I had to go look up Adam Frazier. I don't remember watching him play hardly at all.
Well, because he's been in Pittsburgh.
I know. So I'm saying, I had to watch highlights.
Are you watching a lot of Pirates games?
Not at all.
Like, hey, what's going on with the Pirates tonight?
But
let
being
me check
the first
in.
Signing, I was like, I should have at least had him on a radar somewhere.
Well, I think you're putting some attention into the order. And I don't think that means anything. Right, the fact that they got him first before Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I know that.
Robbie Ray is a much bigger deal.
Just still not a name I saw thrown around.
In the NFL, the order you get signed in matters. I mean, the best free agent out there hasn't signed yet, and Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
So take order out of it. It's not relevant to this conversation. What matters is the Mariners got better yesterday in their starting rotation, which they desperately needed, and I still would continue to add there, whether it's one of the available starters through trade, whether it's a back-end guy like Tyler Anderson, or, heck, why not? Go get Stroman. Why not? You can never have enough pitching. Pitching depth and health is as likely to win you a World Series as anything. So you got to have that. So, yeah, there's no amount that I wouldn't say keep going. But obviously next up for that, they got to sign a bat, and they know that. And hopefully that gets done today. I think today will be the last day we see any of these signings get done before the lockout. It sounds like no progress is being made. They met yesterday. They're meeting again today, the two sides, for the labor talks. And it doesn't sound like it's going anywhere fast. So expect that lockout tomorrow night at midnight. Well, get something done before then, whether it's Chris Bryant or Trevor Story or something else. I would sure sleep a lot better during the lockout, knowing that the Mariners have at least taken care of replacing Kyle Seager, in addition to getting Adam Frazier, in addition to the upgrade with your pitching staff and Robbie Ray. All of a sudden, you're starting to do something here with plenty of opportunities left and one of the best farm systems in baseball that you've largely untapped. There's a lot of good stuff happening there with the Mariners.
We
man.
Need it.
There really is. And I got a lot more on Robbie Ray I want to talk about and just how good he's been. His strikeout numbers are insane. I'll talk a little bit more about him. Up next, though, apparently I'm about to get just run, huh?
It's happening.
It's all on me?
It's happening.
I was barely even in the
more
past
week.
How could I have possibly
cracking
said...
Cracking our knuckles and stretching.
All right. I'm taking all kinds of L's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Quite the busy morning Talk to Brock Heward coming up in 15 minutes. I was texting with him during the game last night, and you know, as a former quarterback, I think a lot of what he saw drove him nuts, both offensively and defensively, so we'll ask Brock about that in 15. Had a chance to talk to Pete Carroll already this morning. We'll replay that in its entirety coming up at 9:30. Before I take the L, I will play you this. This was probably the cut that you'll be hearing from Pete when we asked him about Shane Waldron and what the offensive coordinator could do to help. Here's what he said.
We, like I said, we were open, you know. We got open on plays, and so we were there available. And that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get. And
it goes on from there, but you know, you hear it from Pete. We were open.
Pew, pew, shots fired.
I mean, and specifically say the words Russell Wilson, but you combine that with what he said last night, that the film didn't lie, that the ball just isn't getting to where it needs to. You know, obviously, there's some issues right now with the way Russ is playing. So we'll come back to that over the course of the morning, and you can hear that entire interview at 9:30, or you can go find it online at 710sports.com, wherever you get your podcasts, etc. In the meantime, maybe I'm stalling here because it sounds like I'm the only one taking L's today. What's the deal?
Man,
every Tuesday, 7:30, we hand out L's to people who need them.
And if last night wasn't enough of a beatdown for us, Salk, this one's just for you today. We're going to give everybody a little reprieve. Everyone gets to take...
I threw Kirk Cousins in there, too.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. We'll get, have a little bit of a break.
All right, what did I do wrong? Let's go. Hit me.
Starting with when you were out last week.
Yes. I was out. How did I manage to take an L while I was out?
This is easy. And it comes courtesy of another quarterback who can throw with accuracy at times. Our boy Hasselbeck, he actually jumped in and had to give you a little bit of a warning shot maybe across the bow. This is what he had to say. Well, Mike Lefko and Michael Bumpkus were filling in for you.
So listen, you guys know who Wally Pipp is, right?
Yeah.
That could be Mike Salk, just, you know, the precedent has been set. Let's go.
You can mention that to him. I won't bring that up, but I'll let you mention that to him next week.
We'll let the listeners mention that.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to mention that more than the listeners, that's for sure. Am I going to get Wally Pipped? I heard they were pretty good on Wednesday. This is the problem with being in radio, like... You never want to take vacation because somebody else always going to come in and be better than you.
And that's the thing. Is this one of those jobs that everybody knows when you're gone?
Oh, yeah.
Unless everybody can take a day off and be like, oh, yeah, I took Wednesday off.
Yeah, did the widgets get made? Yeah, they still got made.
Well, and we were wondering if it was some kind of requirement that there has to be a mic on this show at all times.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've had Brian know, right?
Yeah.
Thank God.
That's true.
You know how many people are named Mike that are my age? I don't think I was ever in a single class that didn't have at least three mics.
Well, this one comes courtesy of Hasselbeck.
That's a bunch of losers.
All right, moving on.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you.
This came the very same day, I believe. Maybe it was Tuesday. Good. It was during Tuesday. Take the L last week. We were previewing a little bit of Apple Cup, Cougs, Huskies, of course. You maybe remember this one when it was coming your way. When I said, like, yeah, there's a chance that the Cougs are going to win this game. It's their time. More, we have the sound for it here.
Are they going to beat the Cougs?
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah.
I think the Cougs are going to win this game.
No way. Huskies win. That's just the way this thing ends, man. Wow.
What do you got?
I don't have much, I guess. I was going to try to make an excuse there. Here's the thing. Nah, I'm not going to try. It wasn't about whether or not the Huskies were better than the Cougs. It was just about history being history and, like, how many times have the Cougs come in a hot... And then found a way to just, you know, completely give it up. I don't think anybody... I knew things were bad on Montlake. I didn't know they were that bad.
Maura, what was the score of that game?
It's close.
I believe it was the largest margin of victory in the history of the Apple
Cup. It was a 27-point game. They almost had them, though. Like, a couple breaks go differently, and I honestly think that UW wins that game.
Loser! You're a loser!
All right. Well,
it doesn't stop there, though.
What do you mean?
In the very next breath, I think you even said...
Oh, you continued.
If somehow the Cougs do not win...
It's just that the Huskies will end up upsetting the Cougs in this moment. And by the way, Oregon State will beat Oregon, so it will have mattered.
Oh, yeah, of course. It'll be the insult.
Oregon State will find a way to beat Oregon, and then... Now, if the Huskies win... I mean, if the Cougs win, rather, in some, like, weird stroke of whatever... Just put it on the board right now that Oregon beats Oregon State.
Yeah, so I got that right. The last part was right.
But you said the Huskies will upset the Cougs, and then Oregon State will beat Oregon.
It's just the other half.
I don't know why you guys take me so seriously.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
I think you guys are really putting a lot of, like, seriousness to words that weren't necessarily meant quite as serious as that.
Our next one is an L that quite a few listeners requested.
Oh.
They hit us up on Twitter.
Man, this one, you knew was coming.
Me?
Remember when we were talking about having a swear jar for you that every time he brought his name up, we were going to have to throw money into it because you would not stop mentioning, oh, well, what if we had Cam Newton? What if we had Cam? Man, well, Cam's looking great. Oh, Cam scored a touchdown. Nobody wants to hear about that.
Yeah.
How about Cam? Look at him going back to the Panthers, being a stud.
I believe you gave the listeners an L last week.
They deserved one. Cam was unbelievable. Didn't you hear him yelling, I'm back?
He's back. What happened?
I don't know. I wasn't watching football on Sunday. I was driving home from Bend. What happened? Did I miss something?
Maura, what happened to Cam?
What was he, like 5 for 20?
Oh, he had 5 completions?
Passer rating of like sounds a 9.7 or something.
He got benched.
Pretty
sure.
He got benched.
I'll take the L on
you
Cam.
You bunch of losers!
That one's not over yet, though. You just wait. Cam will have a great game next week.
And so he's just going to be a recurring character on Take the L.
Right. We can just hand that L back and forth.
The next one is one that Maura found that I actually didn't see as well because I was driving back from Montana when this happened, but apparently it's a good blunder from our boy Kirk Cousins.
Oh, this one was great.
I didn't quite see it, Maura.
I saw it. It's hysterical.
He lined up under the guard instead of the center waiting for the snap. Yeah. So Alexander Mattison, the running back, is trying to like line him up where he should be.
Just waving him away.
And he was asked about it in his post-game presser.
Just you moving around on that play, singling guys, is that how you kind of lost? It seemed like you had lost where the center was. You lined up under.
Yeah. I was just moving, trying to get everybody settled up, and then just got under the wrong guy.
Got under the wrong guy.
There's no good.
A loser.
And there's no good way to answer that if you're Kirk Cousins. I mean, you've already been beaten.
Unfortunately,
right? Like
quote.
Once you have to answer that, whatever your quote is going to be bad.
Yeah,
got under the wrong guy.
All right, here you go. That's taking the L. Apparently, most just me.
Can
and
we, can we give the Seahawks one for lining up on the wrong side of that onside kick?
Sure,
certainly.
Give a Seahawks one
give
for almost every play last night. They took an L. That's why they're 3-8.
What about Gerald Everett getting rejected by the Washington football team fans? he tried to jump into the stands.
A bunch of losers.
Yeah, they weren't having any of that. All right, I promise you some Brock Heward. Enough L's. Let's talk to Brock because I was on the text with him last night. He had plenty to say, whether it's about Russell Wilson, this defense, this offense, scheme, where the Seahawks are at. Plus, I got to get a Kalen DeBoer commentary from Brock, so let's jump out a little early. We'll hear from Brock next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Heward says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Yeah! We're missing Brock. He's missing. That's fine. If he's not here in the next minute, I'll just start reading his text messages from last night. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Can I just start reading Brock's private text from last night about the game, what he was watching? I think we might have him. We're going to have Brock here in just a moment. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. Are you there, sir?
Dude, I am here.
All right, let's go. We got a lot to get to, man.
Take it down a notch.
I'm going to just start. I start reading your text messages from last night. Should I start there?
Sure.
They weren't that different, honestly, from what you were tweeting. You were pretty frustrated with what you saw last night.
Bro, it's over. I mean, they're 1% to make the playoffs. So this season, with that loss last night, that's what was on the line. You had some consternation, I think, going into it yesterday. Some reservation and fear about this matchup and where this team was at. And you needed to win that game to keep your season alive. They put the big board up last night in the graphic during the game, right? And I think I told you this the other day. There are two teams in the NFC that are not on the playoff board. You and Detroit. The Seahawks and Detroit, that's it.
That's it.
That's it. That is frankly the level you're playing. Sorry. I mean, that's not a like aberration. Pete can say afterwards, I will not accept this. I don't accept where we're at. I don't accept. Well, this is a bottom line business and you've got to accept that you're a 3-8 football team. And for the last 7 weeks, you have given and shown that,
mm-hmm.
You know, I said to David Shaw the other day before they were playing Notre Dame, I said, coach, how do you think Notre Dame is going to attack you? Do you have a feel? He's like, well, let's just say we haven't put anything on tape to strike any fear in them.
They didn't do much more in that game either, I got to be honest.
How do I think Notre Dame's
going to attack me? I think they're going to run off to Louisiana and see what happens down there.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's a reason. I didn't tell you this. I know we got a lot of Seahawks, but I was on the field before the game. I have never, ever talked to a coach on the field before a game as calm, cool. It was as if you and I were hanging out at Druids with Brian Kelly.
He's, like, yeah, well,
what is going on here?
He knew that his team was going to walk all over Stanford.
He knew that, and then I'm going to guess he knew his agents were talking about $100 million.
Yeah,
deal.
No kidding. I'm sure he's in a pretty good mood. Hey, let me play you some of this from Pete. So, I you know, the Pete stuff with Russ is awfully interesting, obviously, and where this thing goes. You say it's over, you know. So last
night. The season's over.
Well, last night you heard Pete, right? He was asked about the missed throws and said.
Film doesn't lie, you know. We're missing some stuff. I don't see indications of that in practice as we're going, and so we just got. I got to look at the film, you know. We can talk about all the different throws that didn't get where they're supposed to go, but I don't know what to make of it other than the fact we got to keep battling and keep trying to figure it out. I felt like we had some guys open tonight, you know, with some chances, and unfortunately we didn't hook it up.
Well, so I asked him about Shane Waldron this morning, Brock, and what can Waldron do? Because I talked to Pete at 6:30. He was up early, just back on the plane, and so we'll play it again at 9:30. But specifically asked Pete about Waldron and what he can do to help the offense, he said.
We, like I said, we were open, you know. We got open on place, and so we were there available. And that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get, and we needed to just find our way to convert. I don't know that we dropped any balls tonight. I don't remember, you know, not catching a football, you know, and we didn't get any balls knocked down, over at the line of scrimmage. So there's we just need to come through and convert, and everybody needs to contribute to that.
So if it's not the scheme and guys are open and it's not the receivers and they weren't dropping balls.
Yep. Film don't lie. It's on him. Coach putting on him. That's clear as day. And this is what happens when you become a 3-8 football team, Mike. This is what happens. You said to me the other day, on the podcast last week, it won't go there with Pete. No, he won't. He'll take the high road and he will never put it on anybody else. Well, that's about as clear and transparent as him putting it on Russ. Saying, hey, guy, sorry, guys are open. Film don't lie. And we're not delivering. Were balls dropped, Mike? Oh, no, no balls dropped. Balls tipped, Mike? No, no balls were tipped. So he's putting on number three.
So what is going on then with Russ? I mean, you asked me a good question last night. Why isn't Russell elevating his teammates? Because they've had issues, you know, talent-wise for years now. What has changed that Russ can no longer elevate his teammates like he once did?
Well, Brian Griese said it to Van Pelt after the game, and I totally agree with him. And this is one of my texts to you, is that I'm sorry, he for 10 years did not ever sail throws. Or if he did, maybe he missed one, or he put it, you know, where his guy could get it, nobody else. But there's three or four throws a game that he is missing.
Sure. And Pete talked about that. I mean, yes. He mentioned that. Obviously, there's an accuracy issue, whether it's because of the finger or whatever.
Correct.
But this started before the finger and before the accuracy issue showed up.
Well, I think what started early this year was some of the scheme stuff that you're referencing there. And I'm sorry, Mike, you know, and it's super boring and whatever, but it's a bottom line kind of game in and game out, season in and season out at the high school level, you know, at the college level, and most importantly, at the professional level. If your five can't block their four, it makes your life miserable. And early on in Russ's career, when there were scraps off the scrap heap and off the street at tight end and receiver and running back, it could make it work, you know, because they could at least get push. Marshawn and the O-line could at least get push. Mike, they ran 10 times for 18 yards. Throw a blanket. Just throw a blanket on the whole operation. Anytime they ran, it was for 1 yard. And then when they run stunts and rush four, he's getting hit. You know, so your five can't block four. Your right tackle's an average player. Your center's below average player. Your left guard is now hurt. He's regressed. And the backup's a below average player. That's what you got. Your right guard, I think Jackson's playing pretty good. Dwayne's still holding his own, but that's it. So, I mean, last night was a perfect case of that yet again. You can't run it whatsoever. So you pose no threat. And when you can drop seven into coverage, have fun. Yeah, not a real fun game to play. And, oh, by the way, when we drop seven in our four, rush your five, we'll just run a stunt, and we'll hit you, and we'll get you to the ground. We'll make you step up. We'll make you scramble. I mean, it's just you can point all the blame you want if you're Pete on Russ. But I'm going to point quite a bit of blame, Pete, to complete the circle of your team. You want to do what? What do you want to do? You want to run the ball. Brandon Schell and Gabe Jackson and Ethan Posick and Damian Lewis are here to do what? What are they here to do? They're here to run the ball. Well, what did he draft Rashad Penny to do? To run the ball. And he's out with a hammy. And unfortunately, Chris Carson's gone. So I don't expect those guys walking through the door. And that is where this team is at. And that's why this season, as I said to you, is over. Right. A 1% chance to make the playoffs.
Real quick here, I just want to shift gears because we got so many other things going on also, and I want your take on it. Kalen DeBoer, who is he, and more importantly, what is the style he will bring with him?
He will bring a physical, well-coached style that elevates his quarterback. That's what he's done everywhere he's been. It's what he did at Indiana with Michael Penix. It's what he did at Fresno with Jay Kaner. That is what he did as a smaller college coach when he won at an unbelievably historic rate. Got a bunch of texts from people yesterday and some emails from folks just kind of around college football, people that I've seen over the landscape of college sports just saying, you're going to like this dude. You're going to like it. It's not the name that you wanted or people wanted, but you are really going to like this dude. He's going to surround himself with a very good staff. I think what's to keep an eye on now is his coordinator down there at Fresno State. Let's see if he is elevated to the head job. And I'm sorry, his name's escaping me. Or if he can bring him with him to Seattle. That would be a pretty kind of important next phase of this thing to watch.
How about Robbie Ray?
Yeah, how about the fastest innings-wise to 1,000 strikeouts of any player?
Not just that, Brock. Do you realize he has the highest strikeouts per nine inning of anyone in the history of Major League Baseball?
Why was he not front and center as a name on he was a Cy Young Award winner. Why was he not?
Why weren't we talking more about him? I don't know. I guess I didn't. I don't know. It's a good question. We probably should have been. I mean, like, I feel
are
like we all kind of missed on
are
it.
Are you just reading my text?
You know what,
night?
Dude? Why don't you tone it down? Is it my job? Where was Howdy on this one? He's supposed to be all knowing, and I didn't hear from Howdy on this either. I don't know. I don't know why I wasn't thinking more about Robbie Ray. I don't know whether I thought he'd be too rich for their blood or, you know, I guess
and
in my mind he was older than he
deal.
Is.
It's not an outrageous
not
deal
at all.
For starting pitching,
I think it's a
right?
good deal, quite frankly. 5 years, he's out of it when he's 34.
And then today is the day that we're going to get Baez and Chris Bryant.
It's not going to be Baez. Baez ended up in Detroit. That's done, which is fine. Of all the guys who were available, Baez is probably the one I wanted the least.
A little too edgy.
I just think that he's a little too swing and miss. But but ultimately,
Chris Bryant get done today?
Chris Bryant or Trevor Story, I think, are possibilities. Doesn't mean they get done, but I think that the Mariners are out there. They know they need a big power bat like that.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think those are possibilities, and I think Michael Conforto is a possibility.
What a crazy week in Seattle sports.
Yeah, it's nuts. My goodness, the Seahawks go south, the Mariners go north, the Huskies settle for some random dude. I mean, like, it's a it's a pretty crazy week here in Seattle. Who knows what will happen next? All right. See you, buddy. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right.
We'll do the podcast tomorrow as well. Brock and Salk podcast coming out tomorrow. I just throw the little random dude thing in there right at the end once Brock's done so that he can't respond. That's like an old trick of the trade, Justin. I'll teach you more about that if you want a little... A little history, a little lesson in how to make it happen. All right. I have takeaways for you. They're rough coming off that game. They're not tidbits. They're full-on takeaways. I will try to mix in some that are not just, like, painful to talk about. How's that? I think I have at least two that won't hurt, at least you and me, Justin, but I think Maura's going to be, like, specifically bothered by one of them. So you'll have to stick around and hear what it is. It's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.